1039 LI News Radio. Follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook, and listen live 24/7 at linewsradio.com.
She's a good girl.
Yeah.
Loves her mom, loves Jesus.
You know, it when Petty passed last week, I was even more jazzed to get my next guest on. And he wrote a great book, and it's part of another spotlight. It's called Babysitting a Band on the Rocks and Other Adventures With. We'll name some of the bands and more. And I'm talking about the great Greg Praetorius. He wrote a book. It's a fantastic book as far as the inner circle of the band, some of the great band era. And it's a wonderful book. It's available in a lot of places, we'll tell you about. And first time, I called him, I hit him up late yesterday. I was watching the Giant game, falling asleep to the Giant game. And then I woke up and I said, you know what, I need to get Praetorius on. Because I finally finished the book. Somebody sends me a book, I read it. I really actually read the book. And it took me a while to get him here, but it's great to have you here on a Columbus Day, Greg Praetorius.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Jay. Appreciate it.
And Greg's a Huntington guy, so you know, it wasn't out of his way too much.
Yeah. Nah, on Columbus Day worked out good. I have a day job. I may be a writer, but I have a day job too.
You're a NASDAQ guy, right? Are you a NASDAQ?
Yeah, I'm a banker.
You're a banker.
Yeah, right. Not really a banker, but for a bank. So there you go. Put it that way.
Of course,
we'll let that be.
The financial institutions take a bit of a break today, but
yeah.
Great to have you here. Boy, I tell you,
you were
a guy, just to give you a little bit of the Praetorius file here, producing concerts in clubs, theaters, and arenas all during the 80s. Did you have aspirations? Were you musically inclined at any point in your life?
Oh, my God. That's a story. So my brother turned me on to rock music when he came home from college, you know, and I fell all in, started going to concerts, started trying to be a musician, but I had no talent.
On the island?
On the island.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you used to go to like the Coliseum, all these venues and everything else?
Yeah, we used to actually in February weather, walk over there in 10 degree weather, sleep outside for tickets. There was no Ticketron at the time. There was no, you know, obviously online sales, you know, that kind of thing. You bought hard tickets and you had to sleep out to get them. You know, but we had great seats for Zeppelin, Queen, all kinds of
some of the best
acts at the time, and we happened to live a mile away, so that helped. You know,
so in essence, you just loved the genre pretty much.
Oh, I got sucked in completely, and I said, you know what, I want to be in this business.
In what kind of capacity? Do you want to manage? I mean,
you know, I didn't really know. The first thing I did was, you know, four of my buddies had a band; they had talent, unlike me, and I managed them. For a short period.
So they had gigs all across the island, that type of thing? You got them in places?
You know, they were like 16, 17. I was getting them into bars that they really shouldn't have been playing in. But, you know, from there I said, okay, you know, I need really kind of a professional education. At the time, Hofstra University had an incredible concert program. It was really a big rivalry between Stony Brook and Hofstra. They had like all the hottest acts came through. So I specifically went to Hofstra to join their concert committee. You know, which I did, and I got a pretty professional extracurricular education in rock and roll. And from there, along the way, I got hired by my wife and I, because I brought her into the business too. We got hired by a guy named Mark Puma. He used to run the Calderon Concert Hall in Hempstead.
Okay.
All right. So we kind of, it was my senior year. I left the committee and ended up going pro, you know, while I was still going to school. But at the end of the day, it all resulted in probably about 200 shows producing. The title of the book refers to a year spent with Aerosmith, kind of on and off the road, babysitting a band on the rocks, because their dysfunction is kind of legendary. But
Great Steven Tyler and
Joe Perry. Yeah. They had a falling out and Perry left, so you know the band was trying to reconstitute itself and... It was kind of a crazy year. It's It started with a December show, second on the tour, where Steven Tyler passed out on me third song into the show.
Wow.
So, you know, and that was actually 3 days after the Who disaster that people might remember out
sure.
in Cincinnati,
yep.
where about
yep.
8 people got trampled to death.
Yes.
And these shows were what you call general admission, just like those shows were. So everybody was, like, pretty freaked out. So that started a year with Aerosmith where, you know, it was a tough year. We had to put them into clubs.
Now, what year was that now?
That would have been 1980. It was late 79 into
79, 80 Aerosmith.
Yes.
How long the affiliation with Aerosmith now?
You know, it started then and went on for like another 3 years probably. That year was pretty intense. Just
because they have obviously became iconic.
Well, they're what I call a phoenix. You know, those guys... They rose to stardom really, really fast. Couldn't deal with it, like so many people, you know. Fell victim to people, drugs, you know, everything else.
Yep.
But they had a very, very down period at one point. You know, Joe and Steven made up because they're really like the Tyler Richards, Jagger Richards, you know, of Aerosmith. They made up and they cleaned up and they got themselves back into a whole, what I'd say, Aerosmith 2.0.
Right.
And now they're a big hit on the senior circuit, as I say.
It's amazing.
The seniors tour.
Are you amazed, and just staying on that point, are you ever amazed at longevity of some of these groups, how they've hung on and really, you know, they have maintained a level. Maybe not as much from 25 years prior, but people are still loving the music and everything else, and they write new songs and everything. Are you ever amazed at what
you
comes
know,
about here?
You know, I mean, I'm an avid observer of the business, even having been out of it for 35 years. But to me, the songs were always what were key in everything. Even, you know, really... mediocre musicians, if they were great songwriters, they were stars, and they with songs that had legs, you know. Today, a lot of those people are around just because of that, because of a great catalog, and they've probably become even more proficient players till, say, arthritis sets in or something like that. But they don't write as great a songs as they did then. You know, or they may, if you dig enough into a new album, which they may or may not do, because not a lot of them do, you know, they don't sell real well because they don't get radio. They don't get, you know, airplay. But yeah, there's a baby boomer generation that still wants to see these people play, still wants to hear them sing. And that's what's, you know, pushing the concert business to a large extent. Is classic rock talent that attracts people who want to see them and have the money to see them. I mean, look, you know, I think it was 2 years ago was the Coachella of classic rock, you know, out in California. It sold out, I don't know, you know, 200,000 tickets in about, you know, 10 minutes,
yeah.
You know, something like that. You know, Keith Richards goes at the New York Public Library to speak when his book came out, and it was the fastest, I think it was literally like about 10 seconds. They sold the 400
tickets.
It's
amazing, it really is.
You know, that were
so
available.
Talk to me. So you had Aerosmith, and then, I mean, you kind of went along here. What was kind of the next group to kind of infiltrate?
Well, when Aerosmith was falling apart, Van Halen came to the fore. You know, they became, you know, conceivably the world's biggest rock band for a couple of years.
And they had some issues, too, as
well,
far as
yeah.
the singers,
I mean,
and everything,
you know,
else.
Singers and guitarists
yeah,
tend
yeah,
to not get
absolutely.
Along too well because they both have huge egos.
Yep, yep.
You know, and that's what happened with David Lee Roth
yep.
and Eddie Van Halen. You know, David goes, oh, okay, I can be a solo act. I don't need you. And, you know, then it falls apart. And then, you know, 5 years ago, 6 years ago, they you know, rekindle it and realize that that's really what people want to see. And, you know, they do some very lucrative tours and all of that, you know.
But it's amazing, you know, when you see the insertion of singers and everything else, when one leaves, another one takes the place.
Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't.
But it's almost like they don't miss a beat. Case in point, I saw Kansas.
Right.
At the Patchogue Theater, of all places,
right.
some 2 or 3 years ago. And, you know, you remember the old singers, the Steve Walsh, the Kerry
right.
Livgren.
Sure.
And, you know, these new guys come in place. Not only do they pick up where these folks left off. They sound exactly
right.
like them. So these bands, Richard Williams and company, they look for that tone to kind of make sure, well, you know what? We don't want to lose a beat here.
That's right. You know, I mean, these guys have brands, not just bands, but they have
Good
brands,
point. Yeah.
you know, that a large segment of the audience isn't so tuned into the personalities as they are to the sound. So if it sounds like Journey's a perfect case in point, you know, Steve Perry left 30 years ago, and yet they've had a great career, you know, mostly touring.
Great
mostly
run,
touring,
yeah, yeah.
You know, with a lead singer that sounds very much like him. So, yeah, I mean, it goes on and on. And, you know, it's great to have been a part of the Long Island scene was a really active
and of course,
scene
you know,
back then.
When you think of the Long Island scene, you think of Billy Joel, right?
I no mean, question about it.
How great was it. Billy Joel as far as kind of working with and everything else?
You know, Billy was fantastic. You know, again, most of these people I wasn't so close with that they would know my name today. But I was a supporting player, you know, that got to see it up close. When Billy was going out to do the Stranger Tour, there used to be a venue here, right here in Commack, called the Suffolk Forum, also known as Long Island Arena. It was a big, like, airplane
hangar. The old Ducks
played,
I believe.
Ducks played
yeah,
there, yes,
yeah,
at one
yeah,
point,
yep,
you know?
Yep.
And we set up Billy's Stranger Tour
hockey
for three
ducks,
days
is,
there.
Yeah.
yeah, Hockey Ducks. Yeah. And we set up Billy's Stranger Tour there for 3 days back in 77. And it was one of those rare moments where, like, on the second day, he came in to do all his rehearsals. And you're the only person there, essentially, for a private concert by Billy Joel. And he starts not only doing Only the Good Die Young 20 times, because that's the money song and he wants to get it right, you know, but he starts playing other people's. He did the Some Girls album by the Stones was very big that summer. So he's playing yeah. Shattered. Billy Joel skipping across the stage playing Shattered.
That is unbelievable.
You know, nobody will ever see that. But I got to see it,
yeah.
you know, it was special.
And
it was special.
No question about it. Of course, you know, Pink Floyd, you know.
Well, that's it. I have a buddy story.
One of
in
my
there. Yeah.
personal favorites. Great story. If you can just relay it quickly.
Yeah, yeah. Folks. A buddy of mine worked for Ron Delsner, who was producing those shows
sure.
at Nassau Coliseum. And basically, he was charged with picking up the band every night at Mitchell Field. They were coming in by helicopter. And the first night, he was very late. He got lost and everything. And Roger Waters, you know, turns to him and goes, you know, hey, mate, you know, if you're going to be the one picking us up each night, we'd appreciate that you'd be on time. And said it very, you know, I mean, if you know Roger Waters and,
right.
you know, just even hear his singing, yeah. he's got a snide tone of voice, you know. So anyway, it goes well for the rest of the week until the last night of This Is the Wall shows. And the last night, Brian's waiting there, and they're not there, and they're not there, and they're not there. And finally, they show up, they get in the car, and he says, all right, I'm going to have a little bit of fun. And he turns around, and he goes to Roger Waters, you know, mate, if I'm going to be the one picking you up, I'd appreciate it that you're on time. And Rogers had quite a everybody thought he was going to blow up, but he actually appreciated the joke.
Yeah.
And I can't repeat his line, but... but it was, yeah, a classic little story.
Classic indeed. Jethro Tull, what was it like there with that?
You know, I never actually worked with Tull. I was a huge fan.
Big fan of Tull myself.
Huge fan, yeah. huge fan. And saw them 10, 15 times.
Yeah.
That was the first band my brother turned me on to. And then when I had just got out of the business, my wife was still involved. I had backstage passes to go
yeah.
see a show at the Coliseum. And I took her, you know, 12, 13-year-old brothers, because I hadn't told it was like me and a bunch of, you know, little baby boy ducks going to see him. We go to see Ian Anderson. And Ian, you know, turns around, hi, how you doing? I go, oh, Ian, you know, it's wonderful to meet you. Personally, I've seen you like 10, 12 times, you know. And he looks at me and he sees my all-access pass on my shirt. And he goes, oh, really? And how many did you pay for? He's notoriously, he's a Scotsman,
yeah,
and he's notoriously, let's say, frugal or, you know, that kind of thing.
Right,
but,
right.
But that's the book has a lot of little stories like
it's
that.
It's great stories, folks. It's called Babysitting a Band on the Rocks and Other Adventures. You know, you're talking about great bands, iconic, Aerosmith, AC/DC, the Allman Brothers, Van Halen, Pink Floyd, Tull, Billy Joel, Motley Crue, Pretenders, Keith Richards. The Ramones. I mean, the Ramones and other Long Island.
Oh, the Ramones.
You know, I mean,
worked
great
about
stuff
a dozen
with the
times
Ramones.
In the clubs here. But before we run out, I do have to just mention Keith Richards.
Yeah, please.
Because Keith was an interesting story. I just met Keith about 7, 8 years ago.
Yeah.
We just happen to be in Turks and Caicos at the bar, and we sidle up for a drink afterwards, and I go to pet a dog, and there's Keith Richards looking down at me, and we spent the next 3 hours, my wife and I, just drinking. I actually sang with Keith Richards.
Are you kidding me?
Yes, yes. We were both pretty toasted, and we leaned over the bar like two old dogs at one point and started singing a Roy Orbison song.
Unbelievable.
And
that had to be unbelievable.
You know, that's what kind of got me started writing, because the next day I sat down by the pool. I go, did that really happen?
It's really great
that
story.
That really happened?
What do you think of the transition? I mean, we've seen, you know, in any genre, especially in music, you're going to see the transition. I mean, today's songs, ballads, whatever they're called, from far different from, obviously, yesteryear. Somebody like yourself who really appreciates the industry and everything else, I mean, what's your take on the industry itself as far as where it is and where it could be going?
Yeah, well, you know, I'd like to say, I think there's a lot more people making a living making music today, but there's a lot fewer stars. You know, as much as you want, people rail that, you know, radio back in the day, they can't tell me what to listen to. Now it's more democratic. Well, you know, to me, whether it's art, it's music, anything, sometimes you need curators, you know, who have great ears, who have great eyes, and can really pick the quality through the tons of things that are there. I mean, you know. It's for me, it's publishers and hoping one at some point sees the real quality in my book that I think is there. Where's it going? I don't know.
Yeah.
There's almost too much choice, quite honestly. You know, you don't know where to look first.
Well, your take on things is just incredible. And it really kind of brought me back to the day. And folks, you get a kick out of it. It's called Babysitting a Band on the Rocks and Other Adventures, as we mentioned with the groups. It's a book that can be found over where, Greg? Newberry Comics, Roosevelt Field Mall, Rough Trade Records, Williamsburg,
in
Brooklyn. Got to be on Amazon soon. Is that good?
Someday. But right now, my big supporters, Looney Tunes Records and Babylon. They have been the best. They've put me online, and we're selling great. LTCDS.com.
And let's give away a couple right now. We'll give away a couple of books right now. Is that good?
Okay, sure.
Why not? 451-1039, 631-451-1039. The days of yesteryear as far as the great bands. We'll give away a couple of books. First couple of callers at 451-1039. Greg Praetorius, Babysitting a Band on the Rocks. Fantastic. So finally, great chance to meet you.
Appreciate
continue.
It,
good luck in this.
Thanks very much.
In this writing, certainly a pretty good situation for you down the road, hopefully, with more to come.